And the Ashtanga Yoga, as it is called, well, I don't want to get into the details of all the yamas and the niyamas and the samadhi state and the pratyahara, pranayama, niyama, asanas, etc. Because here I'm trying to give you a nutshell, the synthesis. So, pranayama, and the Raja Yoga takes asanas, takes the pranayama, but then they add the element of the mind, the purification of the mind. And what is the aim? To get into a samadhi. The aim of Raja Yoga is to get into a samadhi, wherein you are lost into this world consciousness, all its movements and its problems and suffering, and you live in a samadhi state. But Sri Aurobindo, he would say that we will take up the essential part of Raja Yoga. What is that essential part? Purification of the mind. And Raja Yoga also takes the yoga, Sankhya Yoga, which says that we must divide the Purusha and the Prakriti. That means you may have heard the word witness Purusha. That there is a God within us. In our meditations, we must try to contact that God and look at our outer nature as something outside. That's called the dividing Purusha and Prakriti through meditation. So Sri Aurobindo took up these two principles, separating the Purusha and the Prakriti and the purification of the mind. But then he says, basically, I am not for Samadhi. Sri Aurobindo does not take up the ideal of life to be Samadhi. Because remember, Sri Aurobindo always wanted to work for the change and transformation of the earth. So anything that takes you away from the earth and life, he rejects. He says, we are here to transform our outer nature and our earth. He says, we do not want mukti. We do not want liberation from this world. He says, we want liberation of this world. That means the external, whatever weaknesses we have, whatever we have, anger and passion and, you know, all the violence and all this, which have been coming through centuries since man was first born upon earth. He says, let us change that. He says, realizing the Atman is the first step. But changing the outer nature is as important. That is why I started telling you the Sri Aurobindo's yoga begins where other yogas end. Other yogas end with the realization of Atman. But Sri Aurobindo says, that's step one for me. That's called the ascent. Then he said, there is a descent. You'll have to bring that higher force and transform this body, this mind, this illnesses, this disease. Do you think for perennially is the medical people who are going to treat our bodies? And what treatment have they done? Are our diseases lesser than what they were 5,000 years back? In fact, we have virus, different virus, we have cancers, we have this, and we have dengue, and we have chikungunya, which were not even there 100 years back. So diseases are multiplying, human suffering is multiplying, and medicine is multiplying. They are becoming more and more subtle, more and more hospitals, more and more CAT scanning. But are we in any way better? So Sri Aurobindo says, this will continue if we do not stop this kind of a nonsense of the outer being. So Sri Aurobindo rejects both Hatha Yoga and Raja Yoga and takes only the central principle. Now we come to the third one, the Jnana Yoga. And in the Jnana Yoga we have the famous principle is of negation, that this is not me. The earth is not me. This is a process of neti neti. By this process of negation, where they feel, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, we have also this teaching that actions do not belong to you. You are not the doer. As we have the famous verb and the shloka is there, the right of action you have, but you do not have the right to its fruit. So we are only doers. but we cannot get the fruit. But the next stage, says Lord Krishna, is that you are not even the doer. Someone else does it. That's the Prakriti does it. And the third stage, he says, there's neither Prakriti nor you, only I am there, Purushottama. So that is a stage of the Jnana Yoga, where it says we are not the doers. And that's what I told you in the beginning, Sri Aurobindo, while he was in Baroda, had already reached the stage where he said, I am not the doer, all this enjoyment is not mine, all the achievement is not mine, it belongs to the Divine. So this was something that Sri Aurobindo takes up. But then again, we have this question of, you know, Jnana Yoga rejects action. He says we must be involved with the Divine and go away from action, karma. Because doing action in this world brings you all this punya and papa and karma and all the theory of karma. But Sri Aurobindo again, he says no. Jnana Yoga is good. The object of Jnana Yoga is right. That we must be detached from the works. But it doesn't mean we have to reject the works. We cannot reject works. And for him, Karma Yoga becomes extremely important. So in the next line, what we see is about the question of Karma Yoga. And there, I think some of you who have come to Pondicherry Ashram or to Nainital, as some of you have come, you see, in Sri Aurobindo, Karma Yoga is of great importance. Because Karma Yoga is one that brings in transformation, that brings in change. So karma, he says, will not give us this question of papa and punya. Please understand this, when we do the karma or the action, why do we do it? We have all got our motivation that my business should run well, I must have a profit, I must have a comfortable life, I must have more money, my children should be more comfortable, whatever the reasons. We have a motivation. And that motivation is based on your ego. I want for my family, for my samstha, for my people. So as long as you do the work based on my ego, then all the consequences of the karma also are yours. If the action is yours, the consequence is also yours. It's simple logic. That is why Jnana Yogi said, don't do the karma. But Sri Aurobindo says, no, do it. But with the right attitude. And that, what right attitude? What Sri Krishna had told us. That do it in the sense that you are not the doer. It is the Divine who is the doer. So if we change our attitude, saying that it is the Divine who is doing the work through me, then the consequences of your action are also fall on the Divine. In simple words, karma yoga or karma can become yoga if you do the work with detachment. If you do the work without thinking that I am the great master. You see, today in modern world, the corporate bodies all train our young minds saying that you are the doer, you are the achiever, you have got to bring the profit, you are the CEO. So they bloat up our ego and say, you. But our Gita says, there is no you, there is only He, the Supreme. So you see, the modern principles of business are completely counter to our own yoga, to our own spirituality. Maybe we'll have to come back to it after the modern corporate bodies get a bashing, have a suffering, and then they understand, yes, our old spirituality was the right principle. So Sri Aurobindo would tell us, karma is important, but if you do it with a detachment, it becomes yoga. Otherwise, it becomes your karma, and karma in its negative sense. Well, that is what the Gita had said, and what Sri Aurobindo also, I mean, he follows more or less the Gita there. And then we have lastly the famous Bhakti Yoga, and this Bhakti Yoga is of course most important, because we have seen Lord Krishna in the last chapter telling us that famous verse, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. You see, in the beginning he says, Sarvadharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Raja. In the beginning he says, abandon all dharmas. He doesn't say abandon all karmas. All dharmas, he says. So karma should not be abandoned. But if this limited dharma should be abandoned, and this, he says, take refuge in me. And then next he says, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta. Then he says, become my minded, become my devotee, become, you think of me. So this is the last advice of Lord Krishna, that you become his devotees. So here bhakti in the Gita gets a primary importance, and that's where Sri Aurobindo would say that bhakti and jnana and karma are the three angles of a triangle. One cannot exist with the other. So you should not say jnana yoga is more important or bhakti yoga is more important. Because you see, if you say you love your wife, you love your children, you love your family, you love your parents, how do you show your love? By working for them. You see, most of the husbands will say, look, I'm working for my family. I'm doing extra work, earning extra money. Why? So that my family is better off. Because you love your family, you are working for it. And the more you work in your company, the greater knowledge you get of your working. So in the spirituality also, he would say, if you love the divine, work for the divine. If you work for the divine, you get knowledge of the divine. So we cannot say, I'll just keep doing work. It's not right. There has to be the bhakti aspect also. So this is where we have a synthesis in Sri Aurobindo of what the Bhagavad Gita tells us about the triple path. But then people may tend to think that Sri Aurobindo's yoga and Gita yoga are the same. But this is where I would like to take 1 minute to tell you that although the Gita yoga has the greatest comprehensive integrality about it, this Sri Aurobindo's yoga differs somewhat even from the Gita. Because in the Gita, with all the great teaching of working in the world, and then Sri Krishna says to Arjuna that think of me and fight. He doesn't allow Arjuna to run away from the battlefield. He says, no, stay here. But then if you read the Gita closely, you will see the idea that somewhere there is the ultimate aim is to have cessation of birth. That is in between the lines. That means you escape from the world and you escape from your births. That is the cessation of birth, so that you don't have to return to this world. But Sri Aurobindo says, on the contrary, his philosophy, his yoga would believe that there is an evolutionary process, that we have to come back to the earth as many times as possible, so that our soul evolves. This evolutionary theory is absent in the Gita, which is quite a rampant idea in the modern world, the theory of evolution. It is there in sciences, it is there in other, biotechnology or biology or physics or anything. And even the Westerners have taken to evolution very much. And Sri Aurobindo says, this theory of evolution which is very important for the growth of man is missing in the Gita. And of course, in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, he speaks of different levels between the mind and the divine. We think that the highest thing in man is the mind. That is why the Westerners, they would say, become rational people. As if to become a rational person is the highest achievement. In India, we don't say that. In India, we say you realize your Atman. To realize the Atman is the highest for man, whereas in the West, to become a rational man is the greatest aim. And Sri Aurobindo says, unfortunately, the Western people or even Indians, we do not realize that there are levels of consciousness beyond mind. Like we have the intuition. I'm just giving you an example because most of you have heard about intuitions. So he would say beyond the mind, there is the higher mind, the illumined mind, the intuitive mind, over mind and super mind. These are all ranges of mind, and this is a contribution that has been made completely new by Sri Aurobindo. It is neither in the Vedas, nor in the Upanishads, nor in the Gitas, nor in any acharyas in the last 5,000 years of spirituality that we have had in India. And all this you will get in this great book called the Savitri, the descriptions of the levels of mind beyond mind. And this is again not there. And one of the important things that the difference between Gita and Sri Aurobindo is that we have in Sri Aurobindo the question of the mother. In the Gita, we don't speak about the divine mother. The Lord only speaks of the Purushottama, the Uttama Purusha, he says. And then he calls the Paraprakriti. But the Gita doesn't speak of this female energy, the Aditi, the mother, the deity, the goddess. Whereas in Sri Aurobindo we see a beautiful synthesis of the Purushottama and Aditi, the divine energy. So for once we see a kind of an equilibrium in Sri Aurobindo's yoga between Purusha and Prakriti. So what all the moderners are fighting for, women's liberation, women's rights, women's equality, Sri Aurobindo brings on a spiritual level that there is this Shakti aspect, and that is as primary as the Purushottama himself. So we have, fortunately, in Sri Aurobindo, this great balance which is missing in the Gita. And of course, the question of the supermind, it was too early for Lord Krishna to speak about it. But lastly, going beyond the Gita, we see in Sri Aurobindo a wonderful balance again between Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Because what Sri Aurobindo realized was, if you go through the marga of the Jnana Yoga, that you want to realize the Brahman alone, then we have the tendency of becoming ascetics. We run away from the world. So that is called the impersonal divine. But Bhakti Yoga brings the personal divine. We want Lord Krishna, we want Lord Rama, we want Lord Ganesha. It's the personal deity. And if it's a personal deity, what happens? We are upon earth. If it's just Brahman, we are beyond earth, beyond this manifestation. So Sri Aurobindo says, no, we must have the impersonal and the personal both. Then only the life is not ascetic and at the same time not involved, but we'll have a balanced life. So this is an aspect which you may not realize if you're not philosophers. In fact, this is what has really brought the downfall of our country, asceticism, escapism. And this was because the people in the past, they said, we have to go Vedanta, we have to do the meditation and realize the Brahman. And what is the quickest way? Go to the forest, go to the mountain. So this asceticism and escapism from life, Sri Aurobindo is deadly against it. He says, no, that would bring the downfall of the country in the past. And if we continue that trend, India will never wake up. And lastly, there is one more thing about Sri Aurobindo. I'll take another 5 minutes to tell you. Now, we have seen how Sri Aurobindo has synthesized all these great yogas. But now, what is Sri Aurobindo's own philosophy? Is it just a synthesis? Is it just 2 plus 2 is equal to 4? No. With Sri Aurobindo, 2 plus 2 has become 22. How does he bring in this new element? Sri Aurobindo, out of his own experience, tells us that the ideal that is put in front of his yoga is very simple, and that ideal in one word perhaps could be to have a kind of a, to divinize the human and to immortalize the mortal. A very cryptic word, to divinize the human. That means to make man divine. At first when you hear that, you think it is a too tall a claim. How can man become divine? How can matter become spirit? Because our Vedanta and our old schools of philosophy have said spirit and matter are opposite things. One is avidya, the other is vidya. They can never come together. So that has been so much pounded upon our brain that we think, oh, this is jada, this is matter, this is ignorance, falsehood, and that above is the God and the spirit. So we are here human and there up is the divine. How can man be divinized? But then Sri Aurobindo says, what he has realized is that there is no essential difference between spirit and matter. A simple example, because we have been told by that there is no question of the twain coming together, that we don't believe. But then Sri Aurobindo would say, a simple example, take water. If you heat it, it becomes vapor. If you cool it, it becomes ice. Now, what is the difference between vapor, water and ice? The qualities are the same. It's the same H2O. But it is what we call the mode. In the modern language, you know, we call it the mode. It is the mode that is different. Essentially, it is the same. So he would say, matter and spirit are essentially one and the same, but it is the mode that is different. This is called the hard matter, that is called the gross mode, and that is the subtle mode. So if we have water, if we have vapor, water and ice, if I melt ice, it becomes water. If I melt water, it becomes ice, vapor. And the same process can be reversed. So if these three are one and the same, is a question of process. How ice can become water and water becomes vapor? The process of heating. A simple process of heating. So it's not impossible. So if you can remember this example, you will see that it is not impossible to make matter into spirit, because it was a person who is in the village or is an aborigine who said, how can this hard thing, ice, become water? But we in our little common education, we see process of heating. And that process of heating is called sadhana, is called tapasya, is called yoga. So Sri Aurobindo would tell us that by a process of tapasya and yoga, one can change even this gross physical into the spiritual thing. But then some people would argue, when I heat ice, there's no ice, it becomes completely water. When I heat water, there's no water, it completely becomes vapor. Where is the ice and the water? So similarly, will our bodies vanish when we become spiritualized or divinized? Shobhamantri says, no. It's not necessary that we will vanish. But in this very matter, there will be the divine glow. There will be the transparency. All this inertia would go, the illnesses can go, the flexibility will be there, and I can really go, you know, kilometers and thousands of miles without having to have an aeroplane or anything. Then the body becomes spirit. So he says it's called the transformation of the physical. And that can be done with the simple philosophy that he has put forward, that essentially there is no difference between matter and spirit, except it is what Sri Aurobindo would call the mode of densification. Matter is more dense and spirit is less dense. So densification and opposite is rarefication. The dense matter can't be rarefied, it becomes spirit. However, that is a long philosophy which we come across in the Life Divine. And after that, that being the basic thing, Sri Aurobindo was asked the questions, all this is philosophy and yoga, but tell us how to go about it. How do I start? If somebody wants to take up Sri Aurobindo's philosophy, does he have to read the Life Divine? He says, no. There is in the ashram, Sri Aurobindo Bhavan in Shakespeare Sharane, some of you may have seen, there's a branch of the ashram center. If you go to the library, there's a small book, this tiny book called The Mother, with hardly 25-30 pages, this small tiny book. I would ask you not to read anything, just read the small book. And that tells you how to start. Can we start? You say, I am 32, you are 42, you are 52, you are 62. Can we start? Am I not too late? No. It's never too late to start yoga. You may not be believing in God. You may not be believing that there is a higher principle. And yet, there's a point of time you could read that and you would see you can do something. And the simplest thing is what we call the process of aspiration, rejection and surrender. So in Sri Aurobindo's practical yoga system, these are the three words. Do you aspire for a higher consciousness? You see, many of us may say, no, I don't bother. I have my car, I have my lovely AC, I have my house, I have my family, I'm well off, fine. If you don't want yoga, nobody is going to push it down your throat. But the day you feel that there is something missing in my life, as somebody came to the ashram and told Sri Aurobindo that I have everything in life, minus happiness, minus the peace. So all the rich people may be the biggest rich man, this element cannot come by money. So that is where spirituality brings in that element. So the simple thing is you aspire. Aspire means a call. That yes, I want to have something else. I may have my life rich and fine, but still I want that missing element. That's called the aspiration for a different consciousness. Then the process is called surrender. Surrender to whom and surrender what? It is not the surrender of your material possessions, all the TVs and the cars and the bank money, no. God doesn't require your material surrender. We say we must go to Tirupati and put 50,000 rupees, then only God is happy and we think he does your boons. But that is very material. You may get back from the divine again a material thing, you may give you a nice job or get your daughter married to a nice family, but still that will not give you peace or happiness or the inner joy. So what happens is surrender of what you are. That is called the real surrender. Not what you have. What I have I can give easily. If I have, you know, 10 lakhs rupees, 1 lakh to Tirupati, doesn't matter. 10% I can give away. But can you give what you are? I am a great speaker. I am a great businessman. I have got a, you know, great ahankar. I have 5,000 people working around me. That ahankar, the me. Can I give that to God? You try to do that. That's the most difficult thing. Because if your cup is not emptied of your ahankar, the divine cannot fill your cup. Your pockets may be emptied, but that cup of egoism cannot be emptied so easily. And so Sri Aurobindo and the mother would tell us, give that to the divine what you are. Your ideas, your feelings, your thoughts, your ego, your prejudices, your jealousies, your anger, your passion, your desires. That is what we are. What I have in my pockets, it may vary with you and me. But what we are all the same, under a different garb. So emptying that cup is called the surrender. And the divine says, if you empty that cup, I will come and fill it. And to the extent the divine drop comes into that cup, you will increase the peace and the happiness and the joy of life. So this is the process. And rejection, of course, is the purification, is not to do certain things which do not elevate your consciousness. Rejection is not rejecting I'm rejecting. You know, in India we have a great thing. Oh, he has become a karma yogin, he has become a sadhak, he has become a sannyasa just because he has walked out of his house. It's not rejection of matter. It's that a renunciation is from within, not from outside. Just because you have left all your things behind and you have gone to some ashram in the Nainital or in Kashmir or in Himalayas, it doesn't become, you have become renounced of your desires. So there's an inner renunciation. Well, that's a lot of things that we can speak about on a different session if at all I'm around here. But basically, it is this process of aspiration, rejection and surrender. So a simple thing that I would like to leave with is surrender to the divine all your thoughts, all your feelings, all your actions. How do you surrender? I'm not asking you to go to the temple on Friday or Monday or Tuesday, or to the church on Sunday or to the mosque on Friday. No. You can surrender sitting here, sitting there, sleeping in the bed. When you go to bed, remember that you had a long day, and can you recollect all of them, make a little bouquet and give to the Lord, whomever you think is your Lord, and say, Lord, this bouquet is for you. That's surrender. However, that is what Sri Aurobindo tells us in that little book, a very charming book, and you will love to read that. At one go you can read it. And Sri Aurobindo's yoga that way is individual, but Sri Aurobindo stands for a collective liberation. In Sri Aurobindo there is no individual moksha or salvation at all. He would say, if you seek your own salvation, perhaps we are the most selfish people upon earth. It's like the rich man who wants to live on a tower with all the ACs and all the comforts, and while the below your tower, the man is going hungry for the last 10 days. That kind of a selfishness is equated to the one who seeks moksha. So Sri Aurobindo basically stands for a collective yoga. That means we are children of this earth. Together we will sink or together we will sail. So that is the community feeling. That's the collective feeling. Like we are doing nowadays, a corporate body is helping each other. I don't know how much they help each other. In fact, they really compete with each other. But any collective cooperation is on the spiritual level called the collective yoga. Well, all these days in India, we could not have this collective yoga. We could not succeed in this yoga because there wasn't the right consciousness and power. And that power is called the supramental power, which is what Sri Aurobindo brought down. Supramental power is the power of Satchidananda himself, is a full and direct power. Up until now, it is as if the divine was working through vibhutis, through people. But now the supermind has come, which is a difficult concept, and I need much more time to explain. But just mentioning that is the power for which Sri Aurobindo and the mother worked for all their life. And in 1950, when Sri Aurobindo left his body, the supramental power came into his body. And 1956, the mother brought it and gave to the entire earth. Well, this yoga becomes a possibility because of this new power. But friend, this is a very much what I would say a nutshell. It is more confusing than clarifying. But you see, within 1 hour to speak of Sri Aurobindo is an impossible task. So normally, as the Dada has seen at Nainital, I speak for 88 days or 10 days, 6 hours a day. And yet, it is the first wave of the ocean that we speak about. However, I'm happy that at least I have taken I have just initiated you to the thought. If you are interested, very close to you, the Shakespeare Sharani with a wonderful library, and you can go there. And if you are more interested, then you can come to my online university. We run an online university at Pondicherry. It is called the Sri Aurobindo Darshan, the University of Tomorrow. It's an online thing. You can take its website is www.sacar.in. That's our website. It's called sacar.in. You will see all the courses that we give in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, philosophy, psychology, spirituality, anything. So we have adopted a new system of giving courses online, and we are affiliated to the Hindu University of America in Florida. And those of us who would like to get their MA and PhD degrees can get them. You work with us online, you don't have to come to Pondicherry at all. If you have a computer at home or in an office, you can connect with us and take the lessons. So there is the basic program called the orientation program, which we do for 4 months. I mean, there I give you the overall overview of psychology and integral psychology, philosophy, yoga, literature and Indian vision of India. And then from there you go to MA, which is 1.5 years. And then you come to PhD, which is 3 years. So I'm hoping that very soon this MS University in Baroda would give us an affiliation, so you can have an Indian equivalence of MA and PhD also. When that happens in April, I'm sure many Indian students would come to this, because I'm seeing the popularity of Sri Aurobindo is growing among the young minds also, but they want a degree, obviously. So I'm trying to get them a degree from MS University. So it's an online university. And even if you want to have one subject, you say, no, I want to know only about psychology, or about his yoga, or about, that's called the individual course. You have to pay the fees, register yourself, get your ID and password, and you can be our student. And we have our panel of teachers from all over the world, because it's online, from US and UK and Bangalore and Calcutta, Hyderabad, everywhere. So we have students from all over the world, teachers from all over the world. But the hub, the controlling center, is with us at Pondicherry. And I would like to leave these two brochures with your center here. If anyone wants to seek further information, you're most welcome. And I'd be happy if anybody would like to enroll. And there is no qualification that you need to be a BA or a BSc, nothing. As long as you can read and write English clearly enough, you're welcome. And secondly, there's no age bar, nothing. And for the orientation program, the fees is 1,600 for the whole course. And then for MA, it differs, etc. You can go onto our website and see the details. And I would be happy to welcome any one of you from here. But I'm sorry I'm a little late, but that is the minimum I could take. Need some question answers, or is it okay?
But Dr. Ananda Reddy, and if any one or two questions, please. Only one or two questions. Please.
I am very grateful to hear this very fascinating lecture from Dr. Reddy. One thing, one question comes to my mind, whether I am wrong or I don't know. Now, there is a difference between what is written in Gita and Sri Aurobindo's synthesis yoga or integral yoga. Now, there should be one ascent from the divine to this world. This is as perceived by Sri Aurobindo. Now, in Gita also, there is a Brahman. So, in the step of the human upliftment of the consciousness, so when Brahman comes to a human mind, it is also the ascent, isn't it? Can we take this thing? Because I feel, maybe I am wrong, there is the same thing it is told by Sri Aurobindo and Sri Krishna, that when this Brahman comes to the human mind, it is a supramental consciousness. So, in this way, if it is a difference or in the same way, it can be explained. This is my question.
Yeah, thank you. Well, as I said, sometimes it's dangerous to give things in a nutshell because you raise more questions unanswered. Because basically, the concept of supermind is not clear with you. Supermind is not at all the question of Brahman coming into the mind. Supermind is a completely different level of consciousness. It is called the truth consciousness, like we have, you know, the mental consciousness, like we have the emotional consciousness, like we have the physical consciousness. Supermind is called the truth consciousness, where you have the totality, the knowledge in its totality, where you have the sense of complete union and unification with all the creatures upon earth. So it is not, as the Gita would say, Purushottama coming into the mind, or that you have the Jnana Marga where you attain the Brahman. You see, when we say the word ascent, that means the human consciousness rises and attains, or what we say, there is an illumination. But in Sri Aurobindo, to attain to the supermind is a great process of a consciousness of individualization, universalization, spiritualization. It's a process. So I think, I'm afraid, we have to be very clear on the definition of the supermind, which I suppose, again, as I said, is a matter of a long discussion. But I see the validity of the question, and you would be well answered if you could really come down to our library and I can suggest some books for you. But it's a very good question, in fact.
You mentioned about this gas and water and ice, and then the different mode it is converted into. But you know, when they are being converted, there's some amount of energy which you have not mentioned, not even touched. What is that energy? That is to either heating or cooling, right? So if the matter has to reach to the divine stage, So some energy, that is the divine energy, has to be applied. Mm-hmm. So in that case, don't you think so, a person, if he applies an energy, and which is spiritual energy, then he really achieves a stage of a divinity, you know? Because these moods are being changed, not by themselves.
Yeah.
There is an element of energy is there.
Right.
Isn't it? Can you please explain that?
Yeah. I think I'm happy that some of you are catching me on the wrong foot. But it's not the wrong foot, it is the half foot, because I have not really taken the full foot and explained to you. If you remember, I did mention that this transforming heat, I said that heat which transforms the ice into water is called tapasya. And that tapasya is now what you are saying, the divine energy, is what I said in the end, the supramental energy. So that is why Sri Aurobindo did the tapasya for 40 years and more, to bring down that supramental energy which can transform the matter to spirit. So theoretically you have caught the idea, and what you said is right, that energy is called the supramental energy of consciousness and power. So that is what was missing, and Sri Aurobindo does that work and gives it to the humanity.